today. I have an incredible show lined up for you. And our first guest didn't answer the phone, so we are going to call her back in a minute. So we'll go back to music in a minute. But first of all, I want to introduce you to someone in the studio with me. Some of you know that I'm a women's healthcare nurse practitioner. Some of you know that I care deeply about reproductive rights. And some of you know that reproductive rights is a controversial topic. So it's always important for us to read this disclaimer, and I'm going to do that now. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. In the studio with me, I have an impressive woman named Rayanne Flores. She is a local Butte County resident, born and raised here. She's a local organizer and activist with the group WORD, Women on Reproductive Defense. And she's also a member of Democratic Socialists of America. She's going to be conducting our interview with Shannon Hovis. And Shannon is a policy expert and political strategist who has spent her career fighting for civil and human rights. She became the director of NARAL, Pro-Choice California, in April. Shannon has overseen the California electoral program since joining NARAL, helping secure electoral victories across the state for NARAL-endorsed candidates in 2018. In her first initiative in NARAL, she led California's resistance to stop Supreme Court nominee Kavanaugh's confirmation. Under her leadership, NARAL Pro-Choice California launched regional action councils to drive NARAL's legislative, electoral, and judicial campaigns locally. This session, she has led the charge for NARAL Pro-Choice California to sponsor the College Student Right to Access Act, which is SB 24, to expand abortion access to California's public universities for medical abortions, and the Dignity in Pregnancy and Childbirth Act, SB 464, to address California's high rates of black maternal mortality. When signed, both of these bills will become the first of their kind in the nation. And we'll tell you more about Shannon, but I don't have her here, so I think it's important to first welcome Rayanne Flores Owens to the KZFR Peace and Justice Show. Thanks for coming in today, and I want to just give you a little airtime there. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you today?
Yeah, you know, I kind of stumbled over WORD, Women on Reproductive Defense. Can you tell our listeners what that is as I try to get Shannon on the line?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Sure. So WORD is a local group that was started back in 2016, I would say. It's just a group of local women activists, and we meet a couple times a month, but we have been, we've put in a program locally for the escorts, clinic escorts. So we do have a escort service that we use, that we have scheduled. We also plan actions in the community. We have offered support to staff in the local clinics here. We have created a document called Know Before You Go. It's for residents and local women to know the difference between crisis pregnancy centers and real health facilities. That's a flyer that you can download on our website called ChicoWomen.org. Let's see, what else? So this last week, on Tuesday the 21st, we had a Stop the Bans rally in Chico, and that really came out of a coalition of different activist groups here in Chico. The first one was WORD, Women on Reproductive Defense, was part of that. The Women's March Chico, the Indigenous Support Collaborative, Trans Empowerment Project of Northern California, Our Revolution Chico, and the Democratic Socialists of America Chico chapter. We want to thank those volunteers and all the other groups that came out. I want to thank the folks that attended. That was the big event. We had about 100 people, maybe a little bit more in the plaza, rallying, showing solidarity with others in the country that right now are seeking to preserve their reproductive rights and also seeking reproductive organization called The Powerhouse. It's people organizing for empowerment and rights. It's located in Montgomery, Alabama. It's next to the city's only abortion clinic. There's one of three in the state. They serve women, LGBTQ plus persons, and other marginalized groups. Right now, they're a house that is located next to the clinic, and they allow women and if they have children, they allow them to stay in that facility overnight. They offer them services, childcare if needed, so that women and individuals can feel supported. And a lot of times, these women are driving hours from different parts of the state to these clinics, and they need support.
So Raina Flores is going to be talking with the woman that I was telling you about, who is an Liberal Pro-Choice California State Director, Shannon Hovis, who I have on the line with me. I hope. Hi, Shannon.
Hi.
Hi. And so Raina, I just want to introduce you to Raina. She's a local activist with our group called WORD, Women on Reproductive Defense, and she is going to be asking you some questions. She is a Butte County native and has an incredible track record for activism here in our community. So, go ahead, Maria.
Hi, Shannon. Thanks for talking with me today.
Absolutely.
That's okay. So, we have a few questions here that we collaborated on with some members. And the first one would be, fake clinics are an issue in our area. What measures around fake clinics would you like to see happen in California? We know that two states, Virginia and Hawaii, have measures opposing fake clinics, but Hawaii's is not currently enforced. And Virginia's measure is a license plate program. How does this license plate program work? Do you know? There's a couple questions in there.
Yeah, interesting. So, of course, NARAL has worked a ton on fake clinics, and particularly NARAL, which is California, has. So, back in 2015, we ran a bill, the Reproductive Facts Act, which went between
more Californians knew about, and how can we get the word out about these? What protections does California not currently have that we should prioritize? Yeah.
a whole, regardless of zip code or income?
I think that there are a lot of things that we can be doing. You know, obviously the news throughout the country has been on these extreme bans that are ordinarily upsetting to people, and rightfully so, because they are horrifying, right? We're talking about we have a total abortion ban that would potentially put a doctor, an abortion provider, in prison for up to 99 years. It could subject the woman to the possibility of being prosecuted herself. In a Georgia 6-week ban, Kentucky 6-week ban, Mississippi, Ohio, Missouri, they could start up there just have, they're just fine. Their 8-week ban, the other things that that's on the list today. And we're talking about an environment where it's not actually just going after physicians and providers. We are now in a setting where women are actually being also potential target for prosecution and jail and incarceration if they have access to abortion care. So this is like an incredible assault on our dignity and life and well-being and ability to operate freely in the world. But what is not being talked about as much is the federal system good news. And so one of the things that they have launched, you know, we're talking about a situation where these bills are obviously a race to the bottom. The intention here is to base the Kavanaugh court to take up, you know, to take up one of these laws in hopes of overturning Roe. And if Roe were presumably when, given the makeup of the court, it is overturned or, you know, that it's to a degree where it effectively doesn't exist, which in many states is already the case, then we're talking about this going back to the state. Right? If Roe goes, then the state dictates their policies, which is why it's the great one in California, because they have very strong abortion protections on the books. So not only is it in our Constitution, it's also in our statute that you are, that you have the right to obtain an abortion, as well as the right to bear healthy children. That is true here. And in other states, we're doing a lot. The 2018 election, it mattered, right? So we won back a lot of state houses, state governorships. And now in those states and places like Nevada, which now has a completely pro-choice legislature and governor, we are, our Daryl Nevada has been running the Trust Nevada Women Act, which just has passed out of the assembly this week, earlier this week, on a 27-13 vote, and is headed to the governor, and that bill will be criminalized abortion in Nevada because they have long had these really awful and antiquated criminal statutes on the books.
Wow.
Getting rid of those means, right, that Nevada women will have these protections, but will be much more protected if we are in an environment where Roe does go.
Okay. Let's see. How can we mobilize together to defeat attacks in the states and in Congress?
Elections matter. I mean, I think that there is nothing more clear right now, given where we are, than that elections matter, right? If Hillary had won the presidency, Kavanaugh would not be sitting on the court, and we would not be seeing these states passing, you know, introducing and passing these extreme bans. So, 30 states that have introduced or signed an abortion ban. That is an astonishing number, right?
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, 2020 is coming, and it matters, and especially, like I said, in this moment, it really matters to be focusing on state level races. And as far as people who live in California, everybody knows people in other states, right? We all come from other states, but California is often a transplant place, and the most people to convince, you know, others about how to vote, their friends and family, people who have personal relationships, and particularly in this moment, what we saw in 2018 is women, and in particular suburban women, who may have even voted for Trump, are now really stepping out, and they're beginning to vote on this issue, because what we've seen historically is people care about this issue. 7 in 10 Americans consistently told that they believe there should be safe and legal access to abortion. They do not want the work. They do not want that right to disappear. The issue is that for the most part, historically, people have not been voting on this issue. Well, now they're
www.voiceofamerica.org for more information.
Great.
And they have a donate button on the page there, I see. And they have a take action button, so there you go, right there.
Yeah, one of the things we're doing right now, too, is, you know, encouraging folks to donate to various abortion funds. We've launched efforts in that space. And if you're following, you know, follow us on social media, you can see the various different abortion funds that we're attracting folks to. You know, in particular, these states where abortion access is becoming so limited and they have these extreme bans. So we could get into a situation where California, states like California, become safe havens, essentially, like sanctuary states, where people come here to access care, and we are, I could certainly envision a world where our government says, you know, give right to access to care is still fundamental, still essential to equality. We will put additional funding aside to cover people from out of state.
And I want to jump in here. This is Chris, your regular host, and Rhianne Flores with Word Women on Reproductive Defense from Butte County is interviewing Shannon Hovis, who is the NARAL Pro-Choice California State Director. And we only have a very short time left, Shannon, and I wanted to find out. This has been a good interview, you said so much, but I would like to know what you feel is most important to get across to our listeners in the next 3 minutes or so.
I think there are a lot of pieces. One is know that we are the perpetrator majority, that the vast majority of Californians, that 84% is how many of them should, that 84% of Californians support access to safe and legal abortion. Like I said before, 7 in 10 Americans are all. So we really are the majority, and we need to lead in that fashion. I think calling out the hypocrisy of those who would claim to be pro-life, particularly in this moment, is really important. Because what we're seeing, these bans, abortion bans, the only thing that they do is compromise the health of a pregnant person. That is the only thing that they do. And so we're in a situation where, you know, here in California, one of the bills we're sponsoring is a bill to address our persistently high rates of black maternal mortality rates, and we're specifically, you know, going after this to proactively address this issue. And in other states, you know, I've yet to see a pro-life, a so-called pro-life state, actually putting in place policies to protect and save lives. And the day, you know, the day that we can see that, then we can have a different conversation. But let's be very clear about what they're after. The only thing they're after is making sure to criminalize abortion and punish women, and that's the really very, very frightening part of this. So I want us to tell the truth to what's happening. And then the last thing is 2020. People cannot put this out. We have to be. I mean, it is coming, and it could really change the tide here if we get this right. And if we don't, you know, what the horror that people are seeing and feeling, the fear, the anger, the frustration. I don't understand. My mother fought this battle. My grandmother fought this battle. Why am I fighting this battle now, right? That will be the fallout if we don't act.
So some urgency. We need to act, organize,
right,
to be there.
And, Brian, do you want to call out anybody in Butte County? This is your clarion call. We can give you like 30 seconds. What do you want to tell listeners in terms of how they can get involved locally?
Sure. I would say if you were at that rally and you felt that energy that we had there, that solidarity, those moments, you need to get up, you need to get out, you need to organize, you need to contact one of these local groups of work, Women on Reproductive Defense, get involved with the Women's March Chico, contact the Democratic Socialists of America, call your local clinic, find out if you can get on the schedule to escort patients. She's right. Sharon's right. Don't sit this one out. We need to create some sense of urgency and focus. We need to preserve our rights.
That's right. So this is Chris, and this is the Peace and Justice Program, and you have been listening to the State Director of Pro-Choice California, also called NARAL, reproductive defense. I want to thank you both for being on the Peace and Justice Program with me today.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, Rayanne, I'm going to let you go, but thank you again for coming in. We're going to cut to a song, and this is a Mavis Staples, and let's see, we started off the show with We Won't Keep Quiet by Iris DeMent, and this song is also a good song, and by Rising Appalachian Mavis Staples, and stay tuned for our next guest, and thank you for being with us today on the Peace and Justice Program. Such important things we're doing. Speakers will be Will Kingori. He's an educator, healer, up. This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. I want to thank our underwriters and in this hour. I'm thanking Garden Villa Cafe, which gives back to the community by donating a portion of their sales each month to the Arc of Butte County and your community radio station, KZFR. They're open weekdays from 8 to 3 at 196 Classic Road. The Garden Villa Cafe, honoring the compassion we show for each other. Honoring the compassion we show for each other. This is too important of a phrase to pass over. And Sonia Perry, a local Allstate insurance agent. Sonia is concerned about the community and helps families understand their immediate long-term needs and goals. Whether you're protecting your life, home, auto, boat, or motorcycle, Sonia Perry can help. Sonia can be reached by calling or texting 345-2351. Also want to thank Hot Yoga Club of Chico with classes for all ability levels. Hot yoga is a proven way to reduce stress, lose weight, and develop strength and flexibility. Hot Yoga Club of Chico has classes 7 days a week at 1140 Mangrove Avenue. To see a class schedule and learn more, visit hotyogaclub.com or call them at 321-0611. Also, Aloha Tai Chi. For over 12 years, Michael has guided students in the ancient tradition of Tai Chi to help improve health by reducing stress, improve posture, coordination, circulation, and balance. Aloha Tai Chi classes are held at the Chico Women's Club every Wednesday evening from 6 to 7. Drop-ins are always welcome. For more information, call Michael at 520-6534. So, I'm going to put that song back on. I'm going to stick the song. And then get my guest on the line. So stay with us, please. This is a Peace and Justice program, and I'm so glad you're with us. Important news coming out here. Hang on.
Of homicides that are happening now, and in
Sacramento 30 to 40 annual homicides. So my guest, Julius Thibodeau, has himself, at a very young age, been involved in gang violence and has a lot to tell us. And I was wondering, Julius, I know I didn't do a very good introduction there, but you are, from my understanding, you began working as a mentor for the Richmond program and later applied to run the Sacramento pilot, and then you were hired the mentors in July. You got like 39 men to join the program. So what about you is so special that you would be able to help these young men? Tell us a little bit, if you feel like it, about your life and what is so unique about you.
Well, the thing is that I would have to say that makes me so relatable to the young man is that there isn't a lot that's unique about me except for the fact that I was able to finally realize that road that we all are traveling down is a road that ends to nowhere. That there is no way that you can live a life of self-hatred and somehow you're going to build this empire of fighting on your own community. So that's probably the only thing. And there are many of us who discover that. But for the most part, my experience growing up in the inner city is very similar to the young man that I serve. So that the thing is not about being unique. The thing is about commonalities. Like, what do we have in common?
Yes.
And remembering, being humble enough to remember what it was like to be impacted by trauma and have all the wrong answers to a healthy response to that, and not being able to have anyone there where you're trying to figure this out on your own. And in many cases, in many instances, we're coming up with the wrong answers. And these things that have impacted us, the trauma that has impacted us, has basically taunted us to respond in just destructive ways, whether it's self-destructive or, of course, destructive to our communities.
Yeah, that's really well said. And I really want to thank you for being on the Peace and Justice Program today. And, you know, I think of you as an adult male, and I think about a teenager as somebody who cares about his peer group, is in the act of kind of growing up and kind of rebelling against authority. How has it been for you to immerse yourself in youth culture, especially when you've been away for so long because you were yourself incarcerated? What is it like for you to be doing this, to hit the ground running and doing this work?
Well, for me, it's really, I lived a structured life while I was behind the wall. My kids, I served 23 years in California correctional facility. For me, it was very important as a lifer, and many others who were serving life sentences, it was very important that we brought some type of peace and calm to it. do this to me? And it's all about him, really. It's as sad as it is. And it's sad to say that in most instances, we're talking about functioning from a place of low self-esteem, not knowing yourself, and not having really the confidence that you think you're displaying by this bravado or this achievement. You're really doing the opposite. You're really treating this small problem like it's an insurmountable mountain that's overwhelming for you, and you have to respond in a way that usually ends up you sacrificing your freedom, and unfortunately probably harming someone else, or even going as far as sacrificing someone else's life, mm-hmm. saving someone else's life over such a trivial matter.
Right. And I think about the structural racism that doesn't give these kids kind of a buffering. You know, they don't have maybe after school programs. They may not have parents in the home. They may have so many burdens with how they've lived their whole lives. They don't have the tools, and it's sort of dog eat dog. And I just feel like, you know, anybody who is hard on your program, you know, like I know you've had some resistance from the right wing about the strategy of giving these kids a financial incentive. What would you say to them?
So, it's very sad, though, and not to go back to digress, but it's not exactly not digress. When you talk about going all the way back to slavery, like, that's a traumatic experience that we received no counseling. But essentially seeing counseling after they were free or Emancipation Proclamation, there were no social services for blacks, for ex-slaves. And then we just come all the way to the fast forward, just going through the project. No social services. It ends up horrific trauma that impacted these communities. We're talking about just trauma after experience. And we're talking about hundreds of years. And we're talking about just, you know, you have here. Talk about slavery, crack age, Jim Crow era. Just like eras where we're just told to pick ourselves up by the boots, and and unfortunately we've got those same teachings.
Yeah.
So now we tell our kids the same thing that the slaves asked for. Just man up, you know. You're be grateful. And move forward. Stop living. Well, the past has shaped, molded how I see myself, how I see my community. I need someone to help me and instill in me that I have value, that I value.
Yeah. And these kids, this could be the next Einstein, the next Barack Obama, you know. And they could, you know, some of these kids have such great gifts that they aren't going to be able to share with the world because either they become a killer or they're killed, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I found out about you from the California Forum, the Sacramento Bee, ran your article, and it talks a little bit about you, and then it goes into the work of Advanced Peace and how you get funding, and you had a critique about the funding, and I think it's extremely important that people know that they can be involved in helping your program just by supporting your funding. And you tell us about the California Violence Intervention and Prevention Grant Program.
Yes, so right now, and even though California has in many ways led the way in the fight against gun violence and gun violence reduction and gang violence, intervention, prevention, we're not funded accordingly. And when I say that, I'm more of a young men and women that I'm servicing from ages 12 to 17. And only God knows. But without that, I'm not sure if the city of Sacramento had its first year in 2018 of no teen homicides, which is a monumental accomplishment. And we're talking about just having the support and the services to help these young men and women make better decisions. And that's very important that people understand that. But at the end of the day, everything is heavily or totally reliant upon them making better decisions. And when you see the drop in the crime rate, the drop in the murders, the drop in the shootings, that's actually what's going on behind closed doors. That's what's happening in the shadows that you don't see, is that these young men and women that people are so quick to condemn, so reluctant to invest in, they're making better decisions.
Yeah.
I'm not with them. My guys, they're with them a substantial amount of time, and they're encouraging them, and they're challenging them, and they're inspiring them. But when they leave them, now it's up to this young man or this young woman to take what's been invested in them and to take the time and then all the tutelage and for them to apply. They're burning with applying this, and usually still facing the same harm that they were facing. They still go on to the same situation. They still go on to the same neighborhoods. But now, as you stated earlier, they have a few more tools in their toolbox. They have a few more people, and it's difficult in their support system, and it's difficult teaching them how to network. I've dealt with young men and young women who it's been hammered in them to be a self-sufficient. Means that you don't rely on anyone. And that's not even to get into the fact that they can't even emote. You know, they can't even cry. You have young men and their parents have been telling them to wipe those tears and not to cry, probably since the age of 2 or earlier.
That's hard. You know, because, you know, no kid walks out of the door and thinks, I'm going to shoot somebody today. They I'm so appreciative for your program, and I want listeners to know a little bit about the Richmond program, because Richmond set the stage for this highly successful program, and I know you're trying to get it out to other cities around the country, and so it's really important for our listeners to have this buy-in to understand just how critically important this is.
Well, I want to follow the Richard DeVall Bogan, and right now the program administrator and the program manager in Richmond, who is Sam Bond, and his assistant is James Houston. They've just done a remarkable job in giving us a model to follow. And the one thing that DeVall will always tell you is that these things are based on our program itself. It's really based on getting in there and developing relationships, right? Tearing away these walls that these young men and women have built up, and they haven't built it up because they want to be ostracized, or simply because they've been ostracized from society. They've built it up because these are defense mechanisms for them. They haven't, they've been let down, they
heart for them, and also heart for you, because you're spending all the time, all your time with, you know, that these kids are so traumatized and have such difficult lives. It must be hard to go home and just let it go, because you're always, it must feel like you're always on, because you're having to be so much there when you're mentoring these kids. I mean, how are you supporting yourself?
So, I'll say for me, Martine and I, we basically lean on one another. Mm-hmm. We haven't, and I have to be honest, we haven't become experts on self-care factors yet. It's like our hearts lead us in this work. And I get it. I understand. We all fully understand how important self-care is that we will burn out and we won't learn all in this work if we don't take the time out to take care of each other and to take care of ourselves. It's just so difficult when you have these young men and young women and you see them, and when they start to get in and they start to do things like we have. A handful of them graduating, and it's so inspirational. I find my guys, I have two guys in Oak Park, Ethan Studd and Clinton Fields. I have two guys in the South, Freddie Dearborn and Marcus McGee Jr. And Marcus McGee Jr. Basically runs, he's my lead. And then we have two hires in Del Paso Heights, Evel Humphrey Grant, and his father, Gerald Humphreys, a.k.a. King. And when you see these guys, with these young men, with these young women, you'll just be amazed at how close-knit. It's like they just woven themselves into their lives. And it's challenging, because for us, we want the young men and women who don't necessarily want service, because they just don't have any faith in the system. And so we have to seek out those. It's not about the ones that seek us out. It's about the ones that have basically just found their own little corner, and they're basically willing to exist in this sort of culture for the rest of their lives, because they can't even envision themselves being a part of society.
To people just really quick. You say in Richmond, where I'm from, murder is still by 53% in the 5 years following the adoption of Richmond's Peacemaker Fellowship and other violence prevention strategies in 2010. Richmond went from an average of 41 homicides in the 5 years before the intervention to an average of 18 homicides in the 5 years after. So this has made a huge economic effect, saved so much money, and done such important work. In the last minutes I have you, Julius Tito, I was wondering if you could tell us, how can we support your work, and what are your last words for our listeners here up in Northern California, which is mostly white? And so how can a rural community hear the message of Sacramento's communities of color and lend support as allies?
So one of the things you can do is seek to understand first about any others. That's the flaw of wanting to be understood at first. And so it would help if all of us sought to understand what the situation is, who we're dealing with, and how best to service these young men and women. And I say that because we're talking about word choice here. The media can say, oh, they're paying criminals to stop committing crimes. there can be. You know, when there's something for us to gain, but let's really put our heart in our mind and the effort and the work behind it. Where that can be true, and I promise you. And the thing is that not only will we save money because it cost us $1 billion. Or I'm not thinking $1.5 billion. But our homicide in the city of Sacramento, I believe it's $400,000 just to incarcerate a juvenile for a year. Our program is 4 years, $1.5 million. So our program pays for itself, just stopping one homicide.
Yeah, exactly.
It pays for itself for 4 years.
I want to thank you.
If you stop one homicide.
Yeah, I hear you. I get this, and I hope
it's you know, and just to add real quickly,
sure.
In 2017, you had 9 homicides. A total of 9.
Yeah.
And with the work that we're doing, we're partnering with the organizations here, the Chad Hewitt and Sierra Health Foundation and Black Child Legacy and Sacramento Ag Park here, just to name a few of the organizations that we work with, to go from 9 to 0 teen homicides is even a year. And I hate to put it to this dollar amount, but if you just want to understand the investment that you make, you saved millions. Because nine homicides is what we're talking like. You're talking like $14 million.
Yeah, it's nine too many. Julius, I have to let you go. I want to thank you for your work. For being our guest on the Peace and Justice program today. I look forward to supporting your work as you continue it. And perhaps I could get you back on the show too in the future when you have more time with the programs, because we do want to support your work and keep you safe and hear from you again, because I don't think you got to say everything you wanted to say. Thank you. Peace to you.
Thank you.
Okay,
take care.
All right. Amazing, man. Absolutely amazing. And I'm so grateful that we have KCFR and we have a voice for people like him. I'm going to cut just some music and then we'll be back with you with our third guest for this Peace and Justice segment. And we'll be followed by playing that at 1 o'clock, so stay tuned for that, too. Here we go. Just
Friday, 11:30 to 1 with rotating hosts, and I really appreciate the fact that we have had this slot for a long time, and I hope that you'll tell other people about it so that these incredible guests can be heard by more and more people as we go along. I have on the phone with me today the director of Just Foreign Policy, Robert Nahman. He wrote a series chapter in the WikiLeaks files, The World According to U.S. Empire. He's the president of the board of Truth Out. He has worked as a policy analyst and researcher at the Center for Economic and Policy Research and also Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. He has a master's degree in economics and mathematics from the University of Illinois and has studied and worked in the Middle East. I would like you first, Robert Nahman, to tell us a little bit about your organization, Just Foreign Policy.
We started in the summer of 2006 with the broad-based mandate of trying to reform the U.S. foreign policy so that it reflected the values and interests of the majority of Americans rather than the narrow special interests that have dominated U.S. foreign policy for decades, at least. In particular, with a focus on ending wars and preventing new ones, pushing the U.S. to resolve conflicts through diplomacy rather than use of force and threat of force, and pushing the U.S. towards compliance with international law.
Right.
We had a particular focus on the Middle East because that's where most U.S. wars and threat of wars are. Since 2006, we started this focus on pushing U.S. government and the Bush administration to use diplomacy rather than force, the threat of force in dealing with Iran, particularly over its nuclear program. And we've had particular focus on pushing for compliance with and utilizing the Codename, the War Powers Resolution of 1973, and Article 1 of the Constitution to and the practice of presidents going to war without prior authorization by Congress, as required by the Constitution, the War Powers Resolution. We particularly focused on that with respect to the war in Libya, Models 1 in 2011, which was never authorized by Congress, and threat to go to war with Syria in August 2013, which was blocked by invoking the War Powers Resolution by members of Congress insisting on their war powers. And since March 2015, we've been trying to organize people around the fact that U.S. participation in the Saudi UAE war in Yemen is unconstitutional because it's never been authorized by Congress, and trying to get Congress to invoke the War Powers Resolution to stop it, which finally, after 4 years of this unconstitutional war, which was unconstitutional law, which started by Obama, finally, Congress did vote to end the war. Unfortunately, that joint resolution was vetoed by President Trump, and that's where we are now. And just today, as you may know, the Trump administration has inform Congress that it's going to evade the requirements of the Arms Export Control Act to continue to export U.S. weapons to Saudi Arabia and the UAE for use in their war in Yemen. So that's where we are now.
Oh, I had not heard that. That's terrible news. I did want to talk about Yemen. The conflict in Yemen has been raging for nearly half a decade since Saudi Arabia, along with the help of other Gulf powers and the U.S. and United Kingdom, intervened in the political situation of the country. The U.S. and the U.K. have readily supplied the Saudi forces, despite clear evidence of mass civilian casualties, as well as the human rights record of Saudi Arabia, I might add, as well as purposeful starvation of the Yemeni populace, akin to what is called genocide, and many groups have called this a genocide. So I'd like you to talk to us about what today's statement means and about the whole geopolitics of Yemen and Saudi Arabia, that whole mix?
Well, decision or announcement of the decision by the Trump administration is another great instance of the Trump administration usurping power, which is supposed to belong to Congress, with respect to this war. You've seen time and again that the Congress is oversight, and the Trump administration has repeatedly years of fundraising. Now, what the administration is doing at all, it's a question of, because they've already voted, to say that what the administration is doing is wrong and that they're legal with them. But now, here's creating a greater sense of urgency that Congress needs to have to compel the administration to change its behavior. Because every day that this war goes on, more Syrian children are dying of starvation and disease as a direct result of the unconstitutional U.S. participation in the Saudi-UAE war, which is another article on the New York Times in the last couple of days. The United States is providing ammunition, it's providing bombs, it's providing targeting, that intelligence that the Saudis and the UAE are using to hit their target. And they're also providing diplomatic cover when it needs the Biden Security Council from adopting a resolution to impose a ceasefire. So the United States government is deeply, deeply involved in this war. And I think there's a number of reasons for that. One of them is the influence of the military industrial complex, the Pentagon industrial complex. These corporations are making huge money off this war. There's a piece by Al Stein this week in these times documenting how these companies, how much money these companies have made in the war, how their stock prices have gone up. And it's the same dynamic in Europe. You have human rights groups telling the government to stop exporting these weapons to Saudi Arabia and the UAE for that they're using to commit war crimes against civilians. Then you have the company saying to the government, no, those are our profits, those are our contracts. You can't interfere with that. And so far, well, the battle is kind of going both ways. Up till now, in Congress, they couldn't get it through. But now they're apparently jamming it through. So now the question is, what the U.S. is going to do in Europe? The German government banned exports and then was pressured by the British government to exempt their joint production from the ban and restart exports to Saudi Arabia. So in both the United States and in Europe, this is going both ways. It's not a monolith in either direction. And that's why, that's a reason for people to engage, because it could push it back the other way, or we can get Congress to be more assertive.
Yeah, it sounds, I really appreciate everything you just said, because it is so alarming, not just what's happening in Yemen to the civilians there, and the loss of life that is just unconscionable. But it's also the fact that we're being squeezed into war along with Iran because of Bolton and Pompeo. And can you talk to our listeners a little bit about that? Because I don't think anybody really understands what are they after in Iran. Why are we doing this?
Well, it's a mix of things. It's partly when the Trump administration came in with an agenda of
corporate name and for just foreign policy. So you can Google this organization to find out more and to find out more about what you could be doing. And they also talk about Venezuela on there, so there's other topics. But this program, which he gave us so much information, will be archived on KZFR under programs in this show, so I'll be posting that later. But Robert Newman, I'm sorry to cut you off. You have so much more to tell us.
There's
always more. So I want to thank you for being my guest today on the Peace and Justice Program. And thank you so much for your work and for keeping us up to date. Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. And so I want to thank our underwriters as they close the show out. And would you stay tuned, please, for Playing Dead. Red Lager is going to be your host today. The Peace and Social Justice Program is made possible by generous contributions of KZFR supporters and the Quicksilver Courier Service. Established in 2010, Quicksilver Courier Service has the flexibility to provide a broad range of delivery services. Locally owned, Quicksilver provides reliable courier service for private individuals as well as for legal, medical, and medical professionals. Visit ChicoCourier.com for quality delivery services 24/7. And also want to thank Live Life Juice Company, providing fresh, locally made organic cold-pressed juices and elixirs, plus vegan and gluten-free organic food. They're open weekdays from 9 to 8, weekends from 10 to 6, with delivery service available. More information is available at their website, which is livelifejuiceco.com. On Facebook and Instagram, and also their phone number is 566-3346. Can you please stay tuned for the community calendar and